For my like mental health, I feel like the way I look at it is like chapters. Like I'm not sure if if the story of this war or of Yoni being in reserves is over. I know that we're done with one chapter that was very intense and challenging, but also brought out a lot of strength in us.
Hi, I'm Alex Fletcher.
And I'm Rivki Silver.
We love having deep, meaningful conversations with each other and also with the incredible Jewish women who come on our podcast to share their wisdom, expertise, and perspective.
We choose the best speakers to discuss the topics that are on our mind.
And we're hoping they speak to you just as much as they speak to us.
As one listener said, DMC is like hanging out with friends for coffee and discussing the topics we're all thinking about.
Welcome to Deep, Meaningful Conversations.
We couldn't bring DMC to you without the support of our friends at Town Appliance. You don't need to think too hard or make things more complicated for yourself when you're looking for a new home appliance. Maybe your oven just broke. We've all been there. Well, I don't know. Has everyone been there? Hopefully you've not been there. Or maybe you're renovating your entire kitchen. The obvious choice for any of your appliance needs is Town Appliance.
We really like the idea of supporting a Jewish company instead of a massive big box franchise. And don't you want customer service that can carefully address and anticipate your needs as a firm shopper? Town Appliance has 40 plus years of customer service under their belt. So check out our show notes for their website and contact information. We're so excited to tell you about our episode sponsor, We by SR Play. So my four-year-old was swinging outside and saying, "We." And then it just like all came together.
Like, aha.
I know. Sorry, guys. It took me a few minutes. But I'm just loving this name, We, for a playset company. And they're our episode sponsors.
Yes, I love the whimsy in it.
Yeah.
We's playgrounds are made of top-of-the-line vinyl and other materials and are customized to the needs and wants of your family. Their customer service team considers everything that you want to take into consideration when you're buying a swing set, which is like size and layout of your yard, features, ages of your kids, the style, to make sure that We plus you equals lasting fun.
So we've got a coupon code for our listeners, DMCFREE24, for a free playset accessory. Awesome. You'll find their contact information as well as their website link in our show notes where you can also download their catalog. So, you know, when you're browsing a website looking for clothing for your kids, well, one of the main things I'm looking for is style plus comfort. Often you can just tell on the screen whether it's something that's going to deliver, whether it's a dress or pants. Appaman has a beautiful collection of stylish, trend-setting, and quality clothing. Really, it just pops off the screen.
And don't forget about their shipping and return policy. Appaman has a 30-day return policy, which is so amazing, so generous. And shipping is free for U.S. orders over $50.
Yes, so thanks to our friends at Appaman, we have a coupon code for you. I love all these free things.
I coupons, also like free things.
Saving money, all good. 20% off. For our DMC listeners, the code you want to use is DMC20 at checkout. This is excluding their core collection, and we're going to include this code as well as their website link in our show notes.
We hope all our listeners had a wonderful Purim and are doing well and starting to think about Pesach, or maybe you started thinking about Pesach a long time ago.
Maybe you did. It's pretty amazing how much physical and mental prep goes into this 8-day holiday, right?
I know, it's just 8 days. I know, I was thinking to myself, it's just a week, like what? Like, it's just a week of food.
One of my kids said that to me, that they're like, "Wait, I just realized that Pesach is only 8 days. Like, it's such like a wonderfully blessed ordeal.
Oh my gosh, it feels
a lot longer.
Yeah, it's my favorite. It's my favorite holiday. You know that, right?
No.
Yeah, it's my favorite.
Tell us why.
I don't know. I think it's because I'm type A and I like to clean.
You like to clean.
But also, it's about the... Okay, but like jokes aside, I really connect to the whole like Zaman Cheiruseinu, like
Hold
the
on.
Time of our freedom.
I'm going to guess that it's just the lists because you love the lists. And there are lots of lists
it's
for
true. There are lots of lists. No, but I like the spring. I like the freedom. I like the concept of like it's the time when you can like free yourself of like any bad habit that you want. Like that is the time in the Jewish calendar where it's auspicious to like break free of anything that's holding you down. Like I just love that vibe. And I also like cleaning. Fine. I know this. I am not relatable in this way at all. Everyone can roll their eyes.
That was beautiful. You inspire me.
Well, thank you. Okay, but anyways, to get back on topic, we do have an amazing pre-Pesach episode for you. So, okay, let's grief. From now on, we're not going to talk Pesach until then, okay?
Agreed. Okay, agreed. Fine. No pleasure. So what are we talking about today, Rivki?
Okay, today's episode has actually been a long time coming. We had gotten a number of emails asking us to interview the wife of a reservist in the IDF. And so many of us in Chutz La'aretz want to understand what it's like for the women who are literally holding down the fort in Eretz Yisrael with their husbands off fighting this war that I can't even believe that we're like, just who could have, who could even imagine that it's like still going on, you know? We are very proud and honored to devote today's DMC about this topic.
That's so important. There are so many incredible women who are true heroes taking care of everything right now without the support and the presence of their husbands. And we're not just talking about physical support. Emotional support, of course, on top of it.
Yeah.
And also the physical and emotional support for that they can provide to their children, and they're no longer present. And certainly on top of all of that, you know, these women are tasked with taking care of the emotional health of their children with Abba away serving in a war, and they still need to take care of themselves physically and emotionally. It's just beyond remarkable. I saw a couple months ago the Jerusalem Post did a special issue titled Our Sheroes, which I thought was really, really so nice.
Yeah.
Shining a light on, you know, the remarkable women who are really the unsung heroes behind the IDF, and, you know, highlighting just the extraordinary challenges they face with their spouses on the front lines. And, you know, the article talks about this Shiro's project. It helps out the wives of the reservists in all these different ways.
Wow,
and
amazing.
You know, it's so like, you know what I mean? Like, I just look at that with such awe. It's so not part of my everyday life or my existence living in America. And I can't even imagine. I'm like my only frame of reference would be like serving in like World War II or something in the army. Like, I'm so sadly disconnected from, you know, this idea. It wasn't something that I was raised with in terms of like actually serving in Israel. And I've had an education and I want to learn more.
Yeah. And with everything going on with the war, you know, we want to learn and we want to know more about what these special women, our Jewish sisters in Eretz Yisrael, are going through. So we asked Nina Toker onto the podcast to DMC with us. Nina lives in Pardes Chana with her husband Yoni and children. Many of you may be familiar with Yonina, which is the name of her singing duo together with her husband. Yoni was actually just released from Milim reserves this February, so he is actually home now.
Yeah.
He was doing bedtime while Nina was talking to us, so thank you, Yoni. We are excited to talk to Nina about her music as well as about what this experience has been like for her family and for her personally.
So with that, we bring you our DMC with Nina Toker.
Hi, Nina. Welcome to the podcast. We are very, very happy to have you on and appreciate you making the time for us. Some of our listeners may be familiar with you through your music, your beautiful music, as half of the group Yonina. Can you tell us a little bit about how that got started and how it's evolved over the time, over the years?
Sure. And thanks so much for having me here. So when Yoni and I first got married, I mean, even when we started dating, we realized very quickly that we were both super passionate about music, and we had both been writing and singing our own music like our entire lives.
Wow.
After we got married, we started playing around with the idea of maybe making music together. And at first we kind of just started with these home videos we would post to social media like every Thursday or Friday before Shabbat. That kind of started growing slowly and slowly. At first it was just, you know, friends and family, and then started reaching a few strangers and slowly it started growing. And then there were a few like milestone videos that kind of became more and more viral. And I think the peak was with our one day video, which ended up reaching like more than like 50 million people and on different platforms and different reposts.
Wow.
So that was really wild. And it kind of felt like we'd started something and suddenly Hashem just kind of like got the ball rolling and it kind of started rolling out of our control. And then we started performing, doing concerts in Israel, abroad. We recorded two original albums. And we've been making music together ever since, for about 8 years.
How long have you been married?
Almost 9.
That's so nice. Wow.
And is this both of your jobs, like, at this point?
Yeah, it's pretty much what we do full time. I mean, we both have our own, like, islands of separateness that we kind of go to every once in a while. Yoni's also a tour guide, a certified tour guide. And I have a master's in psychodrama, which is a form of group therapy. But I'd say the vast majority of the time we're making music together.
Wow.
That's really nice. Now I have like all these questions about like, you know, working with your spouse, but that's we'll have to have you on for another DMC to talk about that.
So, the main reason, first of all, you're fascinating. And like, I just love your story and I love what you're doing. But we've been really interested in interviewing the wife of a reservist for a long time now. So grateful that you've agreed to speak with us. And we'd love to hear from you, Nina, about the impact of October 7th, you know, on your life specifically and what happened for you.
Okay. So, yeah, it's definitely something I feel like we're all still processing and kind of trying to reflect on, just to kind of understand, like, whoa, what was that? Like, what just happened to our lives? I actually wrote a song about it, but the way it began for us on October 7th is that we only came back from Vatikin, from, you know, early davening, and he said, you know, I think that there's some craziness going on in the country. I heard all sorts of rumors. And then I was like, okay, I actually told him these words. I said, I really hope there's no war happening because I do not have the energy for that. And I don't know, nobody asked me. So anyways, then my kids already were like on their scooters, ready to go to shul for Simcha Torah. And the neighbors kind of stopped us on our way out and said, listen, it's really nuts, you know, what's happening in the country. Yoni should probably check his phone. But the kids had already like started riding. So I like ran after them and told them to wait. And Yoni in the meanwhile went to his phone and just saw loads of missed phone calls from all of his commanders and immediately understood what he needed to do. And I told the kids, you know, they wanted to walk. They're like, we'll walk on our own to shul. I'm like, you can't walk on your own right now. And they're like, why? I'm like, because things are a little dangerous out there. I didn't exactly know what to say.
Yeah.
Because I really didn't even know what's going on myself. And as I was kind of trying to stall them, Yoni already like ran to the corner of the street and explained to everybody that he needed to go to the army and change into his uniform. And it was all really nuts. And after that, he was basically drafted for almost 130 days.
Wow.
It was much longer than any of us could have imagined. Mm-hmm. At first, when my kids asked, like, how long is daddy going to be gone for? I said, you know, maybe a week, maximum a month. Gosh. Neither of us could imagine anything past that. You know, we're like, oh, it'll be really crazy if he's gone till Hanukkah. And then Hanukkah went by and then Tu B'Shvat came. And then Tu B'Shvat passed and we're like, what is going on? It was really a really crazy experience with a lot of unknown, not, you know, knowing when he'll be able to come visit, when he'll need to go back, how long this is going on for. But also a lot of support, thank God, from community and from friends. And in general, I feel like a lot of strength came out from Am Yisrael in those times. We mamash experienced it. The first few weeks, there was no school. And immediately all the teenagers in our town like organized a camp for all the kids and for free completely. And there was just so much chesed going on with people organizing meals and teenagers, you know, offering to come babysit and a lot of support. But yeah, it was definitely very challenging times.
So that first, when he first went down, like then did he come back up to get more stuff and then go back down, or he just went down straight and he was gone for a little while?
He went right away. I actually only found out on Motzi Shabbat where it was that he went, but it was pretty, I had a feeling that he went to where he usually goes for his reserves, which is the area of Binyamin next to Ramallah. So that's like his go-to place. They went and they immediately switched the soldiers from Golani who went down south. So everyone kind of switched and they were protecting the towns and the areas over there and doing a lot of catching the bad guys, anti-terror activities over there. And then he only came back to visit like 10 days later for like 3 hours for our son's birthday, which I was really, really praying that he'd be able to come. And he came and he surprised him and he was home for like 3 hours and then went back. Didn't even have a chance to shower or anything. It was really crazy. And then about 10 days later, he came back again, like for longer, like 24 hours. And then at a certain point, it became like from this crazy, weird situation where I'm suddenly like a single mom for 4 kids, which is not something I ever thought I would do.
Yeah.
Became like kind of a reality, a very, very weird, challenging, lonely at times reality. But it's amazing that, you know, how I feel like in the end, as people, like we're very adaptable and we grow into things. And even if, you know, at first it just seems impossible and crazy, you find the inner strength and you learn how to handle it and discover your support systems. And I found out, you know, when I need help and how to ask for help and how to make it through. And somehow, you know, we manage.
Yeah, I think that's a really, like, profound statement, really, is that, like, when we find ourselves in situations that you could never imagine, you know, being in such a situation, but then you do find out how much more resilient, like, you really are. It's wild how Hashem made us so adaptable.
Yeah, and also, like, that statement that you made, like, just make sure, it can't be a war because that I can't handle. I mean, the irony of that. But, like, I totally can understand that feeling of, like, I'm maxed out. You can't even imagine that you could add anything else to your list, let alone a war. And, you know, you've come out of it. Just a backtrack, just to give us some context. You're both Olim, correct? You and your husband?
Not exactly. So I was born in Israel. Oh. I was born in Jerusalem. My parents are Olim, where my English is from. And Yoni made Aliyah when he was 5.
Okay.
So we both basically grown up here.
So he went through the IDF before, like when he was a teen.
Yeah, yeah.
Older teen, interesting.
And then
he has an army. He served in the army. He was a commander. And then he's been doing reserves, you know, ever since, but never something like this. It's like, every 3 years, you know, once every 3 years, he goes for like 3 weeks and it's crazy, you know, and here it was something at a totally different scale.
Yeah. Like emotionally and logistically. What, can you give us, can you give us a little picture of like where, I don't know if you want to say like exactly where you live, but like, can you paint us a picture of like, did you have a lot of other women who were kind of like in your shoes that you were able to connect with? Were there other, you know, women whose husbands were also called up like in your community? Like what was it like?
Totally. So we live in a really sweet town called Pardes Chana, like in the north of Israel.
Oh, yeah. And
And it was really powerful, actually, because as, you know, after Yoni said goodbye to us in the corner of the street and we continued walking to shul because, like, what else are we going to do, you know, go back to an empty house and cry.
And panic.
So we, you know, in Simchat Torah, and the kids want their candy bags. So, you know, they're just nailed on those candy bags. So we continue walking to shul, and there's actually a neighbor who kind of saw the whole thing and helped me with, like, she brought an extra stroller and just helped me, like, walk there and even helped me with my conversation with the kids. You know, they were asking me questions I felt like I didn't know how to answer, so I was like, help. Like, what do I say? And then I get to shul and I see all these other women there with red eyes and everyone kind of whispering to each other, and you realize that you're not alone in this situation. And I start realizing that her husband went. But I feel like it was a good enough mix. Like, there were some women, some men who weren't drafted, and then, you know, their families were like very active in supporting, but also a lot of families that were. So there was this like good kind of, I don't know, like a ecosystem, because that's the word I'm looking for, of, you know, supporters and people being supported. And one of my friends like immediately put together this WhatsApp group with like 150 women whose husbands had been drafted, and started organizing this whole team of, you know, people like cooking meals a few times a week and Shabbos meals and help with babysitting and like really anything we needed. So it was a really beautiful support group. And also a beautiful initiative was that someone sponsored, there was a donor who sponsored like free coffee and pastries for women whose husbands were drafted, which at first just seems like a nice perk, but what it actually did is it created this coffee shop, basically became like a coffee shop for women of soldiers. Wow. So then anytime, you know, I had like an exhausting night or a hard morning or whatever it was, or heard bad news, I would have like obviously go and, you know, eat something, which already makes you feel better. But more importantly than that, you know, I would know like in the back of my mind that I'll probably meet a friend there who's in the same situation and we'll be able to, you know, share with each other and support each other. So it created like almost this little hub for women who are in the same situation where we could all kind of support each other and understand each other. Actually, I have two other friends who gave birth right like parallel to what I did. One of them actually after the war had broken out.
Oh, wow.
And her husband was drafted, and one right before the war started. And our youngest was a month and a half when the war began. So we also kind of helped each other get through it together because we're all more or less in the same boat.
Wow. Yeah, like at a similar stage, like that makes such a difference to have that kind of support system.
have one more question.
I feel like in general, one of my takeaways are like, if before the war, I thought the community and friends were important, now it's like oxygen. Like,
wow.
I feel like no one should go through life without a strong community. And like, there's no reason to, because they exist and you should seek them out and you should prioritize where you live according to that, because it's really like, it just makes all the difference.
Mm, absolutely.
Yeah, we totally agree.
Oh my gosh, yes. So you mentioned that your husband came home after 130 days, is that correct?
Yeah, it was officially like released.
Okay, you have to explain this to me. I have like zero understanding and exposure to this whole Milu'im, and that's part of the reason why we're having this DMC. But what does that mean? Like, they don't need him anymore? How is it? And I've seen a number of people like on my social media that are coming home. How do they get to come home? And is it permanent during this war?
Wow, okay, so there's a few different questions there, so I'll try and address all of them. How does it work? I guess the way it works is that there's different stages at this point in the war. At first, it was, first of all, there was a lot of like uncertainty in his area. You know, it was unclear if like what happened in the south was about to happen also in Yehuda Shomron, you know, and there was like a lot of alertness and worries about, you know, will that area also kind of light up on fire or not? But I think that also, since their job was to replace people who went, you know, down south, as things in Gaza have kind of, they let go of a lot of reservists, and now they mostly are using this, it's called Sadir, the people who are actually in their army service currently. And they created like more of a rotation between the reservists. So it's more spread out, like people come back every few months. And I think it depends on like the different phases in war. Now there are a certain phase which is a little, I guess, less active as mm-hmm. it was in the first few months where they just entered. But I think that like everyone is different. Like I have friends whose husbands have been released and then already went back for their second round, except this time it wasn't a surprise. It was like they knew they would be home for, their husband would be home for a month, and then he'd go in for a month and be home for whatever it is. Everybody, depending on where they serve, have a bit of a different schedule. Personally, Yoni doesn't have an upcoming date, like his next reserves officially is in a year, but we're all on standby to see what happens in the north because there's so much uncertainty on what's going to happen on the Lebanon border.
Right.
So if anything breaks out over there, we're back to so step one, and then obviously, you know, everyone's going to be called back and we're going to go into another round. So for my like mental health, I feel like the way I look at it is like chapters. Like, I'm not sure if, you know, if the story of this war or of Yoni being in reserves is over. I know that we're done with one chapter that was very intense and challenging, but also, you know, brought out a lot of strength in us. Now we're in a chapter that's a little more chill and familiar and normal, again, in our personal lives. I know that Israel is still in a state of war. We still have hostages. We still have many people in reserve. So I wouldn't use the word chill on a national level, but on a personal, in the realm of our, you know, day-to-day life and our family life, it almost feels like we're back to normal. And I need to like remind myself that, you know, it's not like that on a larger national scale. And I'm enjoying this quiet period. And I'm also aware that could be that there are more chapters ahead of us, and we need to just be grateful for whatever moments of sanity we have and take it one day at a time. And also, like, I am planned for the future. Meaning, we were debating if should we plan tours abroad? Should we not? Like, can we make travel plans? Can we not? Like, what's going to happen with us in the summer? I don't know. But I can't put my entire life on standby and on hold, just waiting for the war in the north to break out, or for, you know, things to become more intense, because then what do we have? You know, I can't just sit at home. So I feel like I'm gonna try and live as if we can plan for the future, but still keep enough flexibility within me to understand that things may change, you know, at the last minute, because that's the kind of country we live in right now.
Right. And I mean, like, not to get all philosophical, but I feel like that's how it is really all the time. We just have this illusion that we can plan for the future, but really we never know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in store for us. So, you know, I was just thinking about how, so it must have been kind of like for those 130 days that you were kind of living in a state of like suspended animation, like a perpetual limbo. you know, can you walk us through a little bit about like what that was like as far as like, I mean, because you have Kanana, how are you? You have what, four or five kids, little kids?
Four kids. Yeah. Our oldest is 7 and a half.
Yeah. So it's an active stage.
Half a year old.
Oh my gosh. Can you like walk us through a little bit, just like paint us a picture of like, what was a week like, you know, from like Sunday to Shabbat, like as far as like during that like limbo stage?
Yeah, it was all sorts of things. It was much a roller coaster. There were some days where I was like, oh, wow, okay, I can do this, you know, and the kids are acting well and, you know, I'll meet up with a friend for coffee and we'll strengthen each other. And then there were days where, you know, everyone's throwing tantrums at the same time, the baby's crying and I need to nurse her, but the kids are fighting and I'm just like, eyes in the way, I wish I had an extra pair of hands here. And in terms of the limbo, yeah, definitely a lot of uncertainty. Like the kids also, you know, they really missed Yoni. They kept asking like, when is he coming back? When is he visiting? When is he coming back for good? The visits were on one hand really, like gave a lot of strength, but also would kind of throw everybody off balance. Like a lot of times the kids would have extra tantrums. Oh, Defka, wow. When he comes back, be like super clingy. And then after he leaves, like, it's like, oh, everything, you know, just like falls to pieces. And you're almost like, wait, like I actually managed to like build a system here and now everything's like crumbling because again, like everything's being shaken up. So all that coming in and out was very hard. And also, yeah, like all the uncertainty. Like I remember there was one time where, you know, last minute, like he was told that he could go home for 24 hours and he came back. And I'm like, wait, like I have a concert. Like I already like planned this concert that I'm driving to. Like I'm trying to create a life for myself here, you know, with or without you. But like, then, you know, you come in and you come out. But on the other hand, you know, he also didn't have control of his schedule. So it was hard, like trying to create some kind of life and routine, but also constantly need to like be open to taking whatever moments we can, you know, of being together. I think the most extreme was when we were both like feeling super, super burnt out already. He was already drained and exhausted and it was winter and they were doing a lot of like check posts in the rain and, you know, just up all night and sleeping all day and like just very, very intense in terms of his service. And I was totally burnt out from being home and being with the kids. And he finally had a release date. And then a week before he was meant to be released, then he came, you know, home for a visit. And as he was home, he got a text from his officer saying, listen, things have changed. There's, you know, they have more missions for us. They need us here for another month. And then we told the kids and they just had like a complete meltdown. And it was hard, you know, because like you already feel like, oh, like, okay, like we're at the end. And suddenly it's like, no, like you need it, you know. So that was hard. But we made it, you know, in the end. And I think that at that point, you know, where we were both like really needed to like strengthen ourselves, we had this very powerful conversation where we said, you know, one day, like, God willing, our grandchildren are going to ask us, like, where were we during this war? Like, what was going on in our lives? And we'll honestly be able to say, like, we gave it our best. You know, we really did, like, the most that we could within our roles. Like, we did what we were supposed to do, you know, whether it's serving and being part of the, you know, protecting our people and protecting our land or taking care of our home or trying to strengthen people through music. And knowing that, like, even though it's intense and crazy, like we really feel like we're doing our best, you know, with what we feel like we're meant to be doing, gave us both a lot of chizuk.
Beautiful.
That was really, really so inspiring. We're looking forward to continuing this conversation, Nina, in a moment. But first, let's just take a quick break to thank our sponsors.
We'd like to give a big thank you to Town Appliance for being our podcast sponsor. When you're purchasing a home appliance, you just want to get it right the first time. Hello. You want the right price, the right answers to your questions. You want it to be hassle-free. And that is why Town Appliance, which has been around for over 40 years, is the obvious choice. Town Appliance is the largest appliance retailer in the tri-state area. They offer their customers the lowest possible price for any appliance they choose.
Town Appliance is known for providing the best, most honest, and most efficient customer service there is. They carry all major appliance brands displayed in three large showrooms in Lakewood, Cedarhurst, and Baltimore, and they offer a wide selection of appliances in-store and online. So when you're in the market for a new home appliance, think Town Appliance. Their website and contact information can be found in our show notes.
Our episode sponsors at We are offering a coupon code for DMC listeners. So thank you, We by SR Play. You want to use DMC Free 24 for a free accessory. Now, We is the leader in backyard fun and safety since 2010, and We offers customized play sets so you can create that magical space for your children in your own backyard.
So if you are looking for exceptional quality, safety, and customer service, then We is your brand for your next play set. We plus you equals lasting fun. You'll find their website and coupon code in our show notes. And Appaman is also our episode sponsor today. They're a kids' clothing brand. If you want to make sure you're getting the looks you and your kids want and the quality that you're looking for.
Appaman stands as a premier children's clothing brand with an extensive selection of high-quality garments, from impeccably crafted cute little suits, or maybe like handsome, maybe, you know, older boys don't want to be cute, fine. From impeccably crafted suits to cozy winter coats and fashionable sportswear, they cater to diverse tastes and needs of both moms and kids. You'll be happy, your kids be happy, everyone's happy. Appaman is known for their distinctive designs and trend-setting styles.
Yeah, this is all perfect timing for Pesach. Many of you may be familiar with their popular winter coats for boys and girls, as well as their mod suit. It's really not cute, but classy and comfortable. Just the right cut. Appaman also has a great collection of seasonal clothes for boys and girls, so check out their website, which you'll find in our show notes.
Yeah, I think my 9-year-old had an Appaman suit for one of my bar mitzvahs. Yeah. He looked cute because he was little. But my teenagers are handsome. There you go. We also have a discount code for you for these Appaman amazing clothes, DMC20 for 20% off, applicable site-wide, excluding the core collection. Happy shopping. And now let's get you back to our DMC with Nina.
Okay, Nina, so you just touched on part of that mission for you of doing what you're supposed to be doing in this war effort is, you know, helping others through your music. So we'd love to talk with you a little bit about that. How you felt your identity as a musician, you know, has impacted your experience as a wife of a reservist, as a Jewish woman in this war. And you referenced the song that you had composed. If you could tell us a little bit about that too.
So yeah, I feel like, I mean, music is always powerful, but especially when there's very strong emotions, like that's when I manage to write usually. Like if I'm feeling something very strong, like bubbling within me, whether it's sadness or gratitude or joy or whatever, I feel this like almost this urge to, like it just wants to come out and take a shape, and take words. It's kind of like a form of self-therapy for myself, to just really like take that strong emotion and give it a shape and give it words. So at first, you know, there were no words, like just total shock. I don't think I didn't post anything. I didn't write anything. I'm like, what can you even say? Like the world has just been turned upside down. You can't even start to touch and to understand like what is going on. And after about 2-3 weeks, I felt like the words were starting to come back to me and I'm starting to be able to try and process what it is that I went through on that morning of October 7th. And the song came to me, Melaket Et Kochavim, and I just told the story of, you know, what happened, what I experienced, and how I'm trying to, within the difficulty and the hardships, to find those stars, to find that inner strength and that emuna to get through this. And kind of parallel to me being able to return to writing, I also started realizing how much other people needed music because I started getting, you know, requests and invites for either Zooms or like intimate in-person gatherings. And I realized that I don't have to, you know, sit at home, like just feeling sorry for myself for what I'm going through, but I actually have the ability to help other people because we're all in this together. So then I started going out and singing for people, whether it was in different women gatherings for other women, you know, whose husbands have been drafted, or gatherings in our community. And then for people that were, you know, refugees from the north, from the south, who had to leave their homes, and all sorts of different opportunities. And that was very empowering for me because I felt like it allowed me to give something of myself, and music and being with people are two things that always uplift me. So that was a really, really good project for me at the time to kind of get out of my personal story and just connect to the larger story and be able to connect with people and bring strength through music. And then at one of those events where I was singing for Chizuk mission that came in from abroad, I asked them if they wanted to hear an original song that I was working on. And I shared the song. I told them it's only half ready. It was just a verse and a chorus. And at the end of the concert, one of the women there suggested that, she said, "I don't know what your plans are for the second half of the song, but I would really love to hear Yoni's part of the story." So then after that concert, I called Yoni up and he happened to be available to talk. And I said, "Listen, I want you to write your side of the story and we're going to add it to the song."
Wow.
And then he didn't. He's like, "Listen, I have no creativity here, no desires, no nothing. I'm just no connection to music right now." And then I felt like I didn't want to let it go. Like I wanted it to happen. So just one of his visits, I was like, "You know what? I'll write it for you. Tell me what you're going through and I'll try and put it into words." Very powerful to be able to create something together, even though we were so separate. And on the other hand, you know, every time he'd come back, he'd be exhausted. He'd just want to sleep. I'm like, "Come, we're going to the studio to record. Come, we're filming a video." There was even one time where he literally came home for like 5 hours and all he did was sit and like edit the video. Oh. And he ended up like going back and I'm like, "Sorry, like, you didn't even shower. Like, I didn't even offer you any food." It was really like, which again, like you said, the complexity of working together as a couple, like that was one of those moments where I was like, okay, like for this period of time, we're just like musical partners. Like we're so focused on getting the song out there that, you know, we're not even spending any time on other stuff. But no, but there was also time for other things. But yeah, it just became this joint project and we really both felt a strong need to like share the song with other people. And after we released it, it was super powerful because we got a lot of very, very meaningful comments from other couples in reserves, both from the wives and from the husbands, which I was kind of surprised because I felt like I was giving the wife's story. But a lot of men told me that they heard it, even some of them heard it like on the radio while they were in Gaza, or their wife sent it to them.
Wow.
To their phone, and that they really felt like the men and the women felt like we had given words to their story, to their experience as well, which is very powerful when you realize that like your personal story, a moment that was so personal for me, is actually shared by so many other people. So I'm really glad that I had the music with me throughout this journey, and glad that through the music I was able to also, you know, give strength to other people.
I think that's beautiful. Like that point of like validation for yourself that you weren't the only one going through it. And then validation for everyone whose story you were able to put into words and put into words to music that really, yeah. I mean, like music does have that kayak that it really just can bring those emotions to life, you know, to make an immediacy about something that people can be like, "Oh yeah, that's me too," you know? And that it gave chizuk too.
Yeah. It was also cool for the kids. You said validation. I didn't think that the kids would like connect to the song so much, but after like the first time they heard it, they're like, "Play it again, play it again, play it again." And then my oldest was like, "Mommy, that's so cool. That's exactly what happened to us." Mm. And I'm like, "Yeah, because I wrote it." And she's like, that's exactly how it happened." Oh. And it was very powerful for them, except they asked me, there's a line that I say over there that like I told them that daddy needs to go protect. I didn't want them to know from what. So they got kind of like stuck on that line. They're like, "What didn't you want us to know? And why didn't you want us to know it?" So I explained to them, like, "Listen, I didn't know how brave and strong you guys are. And I've discovered, you know, through this war that you guys are very brave and strong children. And you're able to handle a lot of things that I thought might be too scary for you to hear. But now I know that you guys can deal with that."
Hmm. Well, that's so beautiful. That's such a beautiful way to say it. I don't know, like if I had like the presence of mind and eloquence to be able, I'd be like, "Why are you asking? Ah, yeah. Go play somewhere."
Yeah.
What message of chizuk would you like to give now for any? I know we have some listeners who also have husbands in Miluim or who are maybe even in active duty. I don't know, but what message of chizuk would you like to give other wives whose husbands are also, you know, either serving right now or, you know, in the reserves and the future is unknowable?
So first of all, I want to say thank you so much, because every quiet moment that we have here in our country is thanks, you know, to Siyata Dishnaya, but to Hashem's Shlichim here on earth, which are, you know, our soldiers. So first of all, Mamash, thank you. You're doing such an important job, both of you. together. One of the lines in the song is, "Lifamim kdei lenetzach b'yachad tzrich la'amod b'nifrad." You're by each standing on your own, you're mamash helping us in this war together. And I also want to say that, like, something that I learned during, you know, the time that Yoni was gone is that it's mamash important to know how to recognize your needs and ask for help. And I want to say that I also find that people really want to help because it allows them to be also part of the picture and part of the story. And it gives a lot of meaning to the people around you. So, like, mamash, allow yourself to ask for help, especially now that we're, you know, in a time where there's, like, these rotations and some people are in and some people are home. So, like, please, like, use the people around you. Communicate your needs. People really want to help and they want to feel like they're able to give something of themselves to this effort.
Hmm. Oh, that's beautiful. We're going to tap you for some more chizuk now for different listeners. Rifki and I discuss this a lot, how, like, you know, for those of us in America, like, we're too struggling in a different way with this new normal and how this is impacting Klal Yisrael. But we're not impacted directly by the war, and we're not sacrificing the way you are. Can you give us some chizuk from your experiences?
Okay, I'll try.
No pressure.
First of all, I want to say that we'd always, always, always love to see you here in Israel. Reading for you here in Israel, it's always the most meaningful place in the world to be, but definitely in these times more than ever.
Yeah.
If obviously, you know, people who can't come to Israel, so even like to come and to visit, you know, there's super meaningful solidarity missions that are happening now. And I also feel like that allows to taste and to connect a little bit to what's happening here in Israel. I also feel like kind of like a comparison to a wife like giving birth and like a husband like being there. I feel like there's something hard about watching from the side what's going on in Israel, you know, because you see like the pain, but you know, you're not like not experiencing it firsthand.
Interesting.
But honestly, something that we do also experience here firsthand, which sometimes doesn't always get like to the diaspora, is all the beauty that's coming out from Am Yisrael in these times, the unity and the incredible chesed and the resilience and the strength. And sometimes if you're, you know, connected just through like the media, then you don't get to experience also, let's like compare it to those powerful hormones, you know, birth hormones that are happening, you know, side by side with the pain of giving birth. And when you're watching it from the side, then maybe you don't get to experience that. But I feel like when people come here for even for a visit, like you get a little taste of that, of all the beauty also that's coming out of our nation at this time. So if you can't come and experience it firsthand, then know that it exists and find whatever way you can to be part of the story. If it's through, you know, davening for Israel or trying to help or whatever it is, but there's a really powerful story here happening and we're waiting for you all to be part of it. Mm.
Thank you.
Now I'm feeling all the feelings. Nina, thank you so, so much for taking the time to come and speak with us and share your story and your experience and your, you know, thoughtful, beautiful words with us and all of our listeners, and just wishing you continued hatzlacha and, you know, peace and all good things, and thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for your beautiful questions.
Oh, Nina, such a special human being.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was really touched by her. You know, something she said really is just resonating with me right now. She talks about the power of community, like she always knew it, but now it's absolute oxygen. So last night in Cleveland, I had the privilege of hearing Mrs. Einav Danino. She's the mother of hostage Ori Danino. And can I tell you, like,
I was so disappointed that I wasn't able to go.
It's hard to get out, especially bedtime and all of that.
No, I had a thing.
But you had a conflict.
I had a conflict, yeah.
Anyway, I just want to tell you, it was so crazy. I realized this was the first, I'm not talking about the rally that we went to. I realized that this was like the first event that where I was, that gave me the experience of processing.
Oh, wow.
Do you know what I'm saying? I can't. And it's because I was with this my community going through this incredibly emotional experience of hearing her speak. And then there was a Consensus for Women. And I was like, this is the power of community that like I never even knew I needed to process this. Like, and I think a lot of us may be walking around like not really having processed the emotions of October 7th.
No, I think for sure. I think that makes a lot of sense.
So I sort of felt that power of community last night. And when you feel it, that you finally go, oh, you're breathing. Like, it's like she said, it's oxygen. And you're like, oh my gosh, I can't survive without this. And of course, certainly in her circumstances, like these women are supporting each other in so many different ways. Like, they can't survive without them.
Absolutely.
I thought that was really beautiful. Another nice, she had a lot of insights.
Yeah.
Looking at these times as chapters.
I liked how she put that,
So I don't really need to elaborate because all of you heard it yourself, but I would love to try to practice that.
Yeah.
And just finally, I like her perspective, and I know you like to too, Riffy, like how her children were involved.
Yeah.
And that the song that she created to give chizik to other women in the end was very healthy in helping her children process their experiences too.
Yeah. It was very sweet. It was very special. It was very special. I also enjoyed, or not enjoyed, that's not the right word, appreciated what she had said about, you know, just like seeing just how adaptable she really was, you know, like when forced into that situation, which was unimaginable.
Yeah.
You know, and then to see like how it like really we do adapt, you know, to circumstances. We hope we don't ever want to have to adapt to challenging circumstances like this. But, you know, Hashem does give us this kind of strength. And that she also said a couple times, like learning how to ask for help and like really being in touch with what do you need, and not necessarily being like, no, I can do it all myself. It's okay. Like, you know, you can't. No one can.
Right.
And then to be able to like address, like, do you need babysitting? Do you need dinners? Do you need like, what do you need? And to be able to be honest with yourself and to identify it and then to ask for help.
Yeah.
You know, I think those are things that are hard for women in general. Yeah. You know what I mean?
So, and even she said with that like coffee shop, like, do I need to eat something?
Yeah, exactly.
It could be as small as that, you know?
Exactly. Oh, I loved that coffee shop thing. Yeah. The physical and emotional nourishment, you know, in that place. And then also just like I feel like it's an inherently Jewish thing to keep making plans for the future, even though the future is uncertain. I feel like how many Jewish women over the course of the diaspora have had to do exactly that?
Wow.
We don't know what's going to be.
Right.
Oh, you know, like, we have no idea what the future holds. No one has any idea. Sometimes it is more obvious that we don't know, and sometimes it's less obvious. Right. Like, you know, America's still, even with all the cuckoo-ness, you know, that goes on, it's like, it does feel more or less stable, you know, but it's like that ability to say, like, I don't know what the future is going to bring, but I'm going to keep, you know, using my kochos and my abilities and make plans for the future, even though it's uncertain, you know?
Yes.
So yeah. I really appreciated that message. Okay, here's this episode's takeaway. Thinking about the experiences of our fellow sisters holding down their forts in Eretz Yisrael, take a moment this week to reflect on the ways you hold down your fort and strengthen your home. There are a number of appliance stores out there that are targeted to the firm customer, but if you're looking for the best, most reliable company that has been serving customers since 1979, then Town Appliance is your obvious choice.
Town Appliance also offers a price match guarantee, which means they will match any price of an authorized dealer. That's amazing. So check out our show notes for their link, contact information. Get started on your new appliance shopping today with Town Appliance. One last shout out to our episode sponsor, We by SR Play. So We playground structures are of the highest quality and safety standards, and their customer service provides expert planning, working carefully with your space. They ship across North America and even make yard calls if you're in New York or New Jersey. And with We, you can plan every detail of your playset. The experience is truly customized. We will help you design a play structure based on your preferences and budget, so please check out our show notes for their link and contact information.
Something I love about Appaman is that they create clothes to help kids feel comfortable in their own skin, which I think is especially important with dress wear such as suits, which can be stiff and uncomfortable. Appaman has a washable collection of suits. This is a major game changer. No dry cleaning. Check it out.
They also have this great boys' core collection, which features those classics you need for Yom Tov shopping, belts, dress, suits, etc., shirts, all in one place. And if you're looking for new arrivals for boys and girls, ranging from casual to special occasion, definitely check out appaman.com, and we'll put the link for you on their website.
And we've got a special gift for our listeners. Thank you, Appaman, for that. DMC20 coupon code for 20% off, excluding the core collection. We know you've been waiting to hear who our pre-Pesach guest will be on DMC. We are thrilled to announce that we'll be DMCing with Miriam Pascal Cohen, otherwise known as the Overtime Cook, and we'll be DMCing about her new Pesach cookbook, Real Life Pesach Cooking. Doesn't that sound like such a DMC kind of cookbook?
Totally. We can't wait. And if you, by the way, are a fan of DMC, please consider donating to support the work we do. We've added a way for listeners to make a small monthly donation on our website. Please check out our show notes for details about that, as well as a link to our new WhatsApp group. Maybe it's not so new anymore. It feels new and exciting for us. So thank you.
Yeah, new enough.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks to everyone who's joined it, and also thanks to everyone who sends us wonderful emails and messages on our social media about actually our latest episode with the Kichels. We got some nice feedback. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you. And if you want to email us, you're welcome to. It's dmcthepodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. See you next episode.